Today's program has been brought to you by Calavita. Think outside the bottle with Calavita, America's trusted family brand, makers of extra virgin olive oil and fine Italian food products. Calavita.com.
Today's program has been brought to you by Wines of Bordeaux. Visit their website at bordeaux.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
The food talk. We're here at Roberta's, where I just watched a young lady who draped her jacket behind her chair, and when she put it on, it was soaked because the roof leaks. So she's squeezing water, a lot of water, out of the back of her coat. Luckily, it looks like one of those vintage jackets, and it's not her brand new Loro Piano cashmere, or we'd all be in trouble. Anyway, food talk today. Got two great guests. We're going to go straight into it. My second guest, who you should definitely hang on for, is Risto Zazovsky. He is the beverage director for Alta Maria Group, meaning he's a really badass som whose purview is a whole bunch of great restaurants, most of them in New York City, but not all of them. He goes back and forth, I know, to D.C. and they're... Anyway, we're going to talk to him about a bunch of things, including something he's working on now as like a little side thing called the Greenwich Project. That's this super wine-centric event that's taking space, like a pop-up. I think that's the term everyone uses these days. It's so popular. So stay tuned for that. We're going to talk wine for at least 40 minutes, 45 minutes with Risto. It's fascinating. He's a great guy. I love to pick his brain. I love to have Soms in here and get like great, you know, sagastic advice and opinions from people that know what they're talking about. Oh, and he brought some juice to taste, which makes me really happy. But my first guest, really one of New York's great chefs. He's been around for a long time. I'd say he's under the radar, but he's not. You'll see him on like Good Morning Fox and Good Morning America. He gets lots of press. I see him on Facebook, like doing all these television appearances. I'm like, dude, who's your PR people? I mean, God, give him extra money. But besides being a badass chef of an amazing restaurant that's going into its, how many years on the Upper West? 15, 20?
11. Thank you, though. You're aging me, buddy.
No. 50. So it's one of the absolute, it's a pillar of the Upper West Side's culinary scene. It's a great restaurant on a brownstone, mid-block. Just, it has been so solid. I kind of forget how good it is till I like look at pictures of stuff that we film there and see the plates that he does. It's just a really, really great restaurant. Seasonally driven like everybody is these days, but Bill's been on that bandwagon forever. And Bill Telepan goes back to a long time ago. I mean, I think I first heard of him or met him when he was the guy who was Alfred Portale's, I'm going to say he was the chef de cuisine, I don't know what his title was, but he was the guy that was so solid in the kitchen of Gotham Bar and Grill that Alfred, with Bill in his kitchen, was able to do something he's been doing ever since, which is unheard of for chefs, and that's like take off early and not work Friday and Saturday nights. Thanks to Bill Telepan, okay? He's the guy that got you that gig. But aside from all that stuff that he does, all the culinary excellence in New York City, his restaurant, which is fantastic, I don't know how, and you're going to answer this question for me. You've really gotten involved in this idea. We have children, which could explain it, but you've really gotten involved in this idea of great, what's the name, like wellness, and what's the term?
Wellness in the schools.
I was right. I was going to say that, but it just didn't seem culinary enough. You've been involved in this since when, and why did you get involved in the beginning?
I got involved in 2008 at first, and I guess the reason why I got involved is because my daughter was in a public school, and I met these women, one of which was Nancy Easton, who's the founder of Wellness in the Schools and now the executive director. And she and a bunch of moms were handing out sandwiches that they were going to feature in the cafeteria, and they were absolutely delicious. It was during a parent-teacher conference I went there. And I came back, and I said, how can I help? Because I figured, you know, anything involved with food and kids, I wanted to really, you know, be a part of. And so from that point on, I went and I checked out what was going on in the cafeteria, and then we ended up, I was thinking like, all right, I can cook, so let me go in there, see how I can help in the cafeteria. And then we developed these three cafe days, we called them, where I went in and I cooked and featured dishes. You know, we did a salad bar, we did the sandwiches they did one day, and then we did, you know, a vegetarian chili that I made, and we featured them at this school, and they were a success, and we continued on in the two other schools they were involved in at that time. But why I got involved with it is, as you know, I got to learn. I mean, besides, I felt like, you know, there could have been some work done in the cafeteria. I know how hard it is to feed a million kids, which New York City does every day.
Correct.
For a dollar.
Biggest
right?
school,
so I understand
biggest,
that part.
Biggest school program in the country.
Yeah, it's second largest feeding person, producer, whatever, to the military.
Yeah.
But the reason also is 75% of the kids in New York City live at or below the poverty line. So this is the only chance they get for most of them a hot meal during the day. So wellness in the schools, you know, now we're this national nonprofit. You know, fast forward to today, we're in 75 schools in New York City feeding 34,000 kids a day. So we're impacting these kids every day. With, you know, these healthy scratch-cooked meals. And we also have another part of the program, which is called, you know, where we do fitness. So we create these active recesses. So the idea is that, you know, we recreate the school lunch experience by giving them a healthy lunch, active recess. They go into the second half of the day, alert, you know, ready to go learn, ask questions. It's, you know, it's great. I want to be a part of it. You know, I need a healthy lunch and an active recess.
And to your point, I mean, and maybe to put a finer point onto it, to what you just said, it's true. So New York has this monumentally large school system. As you said, over a million kids get fed a day. And a vast majority of them, this may be the best and only hot meal they're going to get all day.
Yeah. No, a lot of them come, you know, some are foster kids, some are single parents who are working two jobs. You know, they're just in tough situations, and they're kids. You know, they didn't ask for it. So there's no reason why us as a country should take care of these our children, you know. And there's a lot of people who say things that are not, I don't even want to say, about, you know what entitlements, you know, are out there. But I think, you know, we're talking about kids here, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know, they didn't grow, they didn't ask to be in this situation. So, and they, you know, to get a chance to, you know, and we're talking about our future innovators, our future productive workers here. And, you know, we want them to learn as much as they can and grow so we as a nation can be, ahead of every, you know, just, you know, I'm losing my words here. I'm getting emotional. But, you know, we want the best innovators, and we want thinkers in our nation and to do good, you know?
Yeah, and it's fun. You know, I have friends that are teachers, and kids come to school hungry and tired. It's a hard way to learn because your brain is just not working, right?
I mean, I always ask people, think about when you're hungry.
Right.
And what
Correct.
Do you like?
Correct.
You know, imagine being a kid going into a school and having to learn in that situation.
Right.
And you know, be alert and you know, write something or do math. I mean, forget it. I'm an animal.
I still can't do math. Doesn't matter how much I eat. And I've seen you over the years I've known you. You've traveled around the country with this idea. I know I've seen you in other states, kind of advocating for this. Can you talk about that a bit? Do you still do any of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, we recently with the Chefs Action Network, which is a group formed by Tom Colicchio, we went down to D.C. and we lobbied Congress. There was 40.
You actually spoke. You spoke before Congress.
40 chefs. States. Sorry. What?
You spoke before Congress. You were like on the floor of Congress.
Yeah, we would go and lobby with
lobby.
The senators.
Gotcha.
And talk about the Children Nutrition Act, which is being reauthorized right now to get their standards now where you have kids a fruit and vegetable that kids are getting fruits and vegetable every day, and we need to and people want to change that. They want to go back to the standards of old where they allowed vending machines, the kids, you know, they didn't have to have whole wheat pot grains or anything like that. But there's a huge success here, and so that's happening right now with these changes that happened in 2010. So we want to keep these standards and, in fact, improve upon them. So that's what we went down there to lobby about.
Can I tell you something? Dirty little secret. So these son of these not nice people that want to go back to the way it was. So one of the hats I wore and one of the careers I had, like, in between whatever I'm doing now and what I did before, was I was an agent selling importers commodities. It's good business. You make a living. You know, you're talking about, like, hundreds and hundreds of containers of stuff a year. And one of the biggest sets of businesses was things like the Texas prison system, the New York school system, the California school system. If you're going to go after bid business, it's an annual contract business. So you have to sell the prisons for 1 year at a fixed price of all sorts of items. And I will tell you that the New York, and this is true for all the school systems, and it's called a reverse auction bid. You phones go live at 10 o'clock and it's over by 11:30, and the lowest price wins the bid. And if I can tell you this factually, that back in those days, the prisoners in New York State ate better than the kids did. I can tell you who got. I knew when we won the bids, and I know when other people won the bids, and I can tell you about the kind of shit that they were selling in all the schools, and it was literally criminal. There was a vendor in New York who I won't mention his name, who actually went to jail, but it was, you know, white collar guy that actually had to do time. It was disgraceful. It was just like, are you kidding? There are no. We're talking about feeding kids, and we're going to do this by reverse auction. Lowest bid wins. Really, it's insane. Yeah. And that's a fact. So there's an event coming up on a Monday in a few weeks. Is that open to the public?
Yes. It's Monday, April 18th. It's their annual gala. It's at the Tribeca rooftop. You can visit our website, wellnessintheschools, with an S at the end, .org, and you can find out about tickets there. And we have about 35 chefs, most of which who are chef partners, which I'll tell you about in a minute. And we're going to have some Alan Katz from New York Distilling Company is going to curate all the drinks. We got Skernick Wines supplying all the wines. So it's always a great event. We have a live auction. We're going to have this VIP hour. We're going to have this cook-off between Michael Anthony of Gramercy Tavern and Untitled. I get them all mixed up.
Yeah.
Rocco Despirito, Amanda Freitag, Alex Gernicelli. What they're going to do is they got the list from the procurement list of school food, and they're going to create a school lunch that we are hoping that whoever wins, or maybe all four of them, if they're great, will add them onto our alternative menu, which is the menu that we work with at our schools. And then, you know, it's going to be a great night. It's always a great party, all right?
And this is this is like a rooftop on DeBrosa Street, right? This is like a rooftop venue on DeBrosa Street in Tribeca.
Yeah, it's down on DeBrosa Street in Tribeca. So it's centrally located for all New York City people.
Yeah.
And I'm also hosting it with Jenna Wolf, who's a TV journalist and a fitness expert, and I've worked out with her. And man, she killed me, man. I'll tell you, I'm glutton for punishment. I'm going back next week.
You've always been in good shape, dude. You're one of those chefs that, like, never got fat or, like, just wilted away. You've always been trim. Has exercise been a big part of your life?
I'm walking the talk. All right, I eat well and I take care of myself. So
good man.
I couldn't go in and smoke cigarettes and have a big belly and say, "Yeah, we got to feed these kids better." I had to do change. I mean, I've always worked out, so
good.
I had to kick the cigarette habit. So I did that many years ago.
All right, so one more time, a shout out to how people can get tickets for that. It's a couple of weeks away on a Monday. You're going to go to what website?
You're going to go to wellnessintheschools.org. It's, you know, wellnessintheschools, one word with an S at the end, .org. And information is right there, and they could get them. And there's a VIP hour from 6 to 7 where we're going to do the cook-off. And then for general admission starts at 7 o'clock. But the food's great. You know, we got a lot of great restaurants who are part of it. And so I'm always excited about it. You know, it's a good time.
Super. Now tell me about the chef's partner thing you're talking about that you had mentioned, alluded to.
Yeah, so what we do is, we bring in chefs like Michael and Alex into the schools themselves. They adopt the school, and what they do is they sort of go in three to four times a year, and they do what we call a cafe day. So they either do demos, they do tastings, which we mostly do. So we do these cooking classes called Wits Labs that they'll also come and participate in. So we have probably like 25 chefs who are involved right now with us, and it's always, you know, it's always great when you go in there with a chef's coat on. Sometimes, you know, some guys bring the tall hats. and the kid, you would just become instant celebrity. I think now with food TV, and everyone knows what chefs do, so it's really exciting.
And those are, and Michael Anthony, that's a huge name. I mean, he's been with Danny for years. He's a super, super talented guy. Was at Gramercy Tavern for years now. Yeah, he's a couple of restaurants, whatever they're called. But in the new one in the Meatpacking District, but he's a badass. He had a great book that just came out, too, V is for Vegetables.
Yeah, no, it's terrific.
It's
and what he's
book.
Done is not only has he taken Gramercy Tavern to be a part of it, but when he opened Untitled and got it settled and got through the process of opening, he's adopted another school with that restaurant, and their whole team is great. I mean, all of Union Square Hospitality has been really supportive of our program. We got Jason from Maialino's helping out also, and then the events group comes in and does some stuff with kids. So they've all been a huge part of our program. It's been really nice.
And he's a New Yorker. He lives up on the Upper East Side, has kids. Eric's Corner, yep. Shelley's got a daughter, and Alex is a superstar. I remember her when she was, you know, down at Chopped, and nobody knew who her name was, and she was shopping for ingredients at the Pioneer Supermarket.
Yeah.
With pocket change, and she's just blown up. I mean, she is huge,
yeah.
And she's a great kid. New York born and bred. Her mom's a star. And Alex, I'm so glad to see her doing so well. So that's great.
Yeah, definitely.
And the kids must love it. She's been on, like, that Chop show forever. Like, everybody knows who Alex is.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it's great. It's great.
Bill, so positive, always talking to you. You're such a great influence in the city, great restaurateur. Again, your restaurant, Telepan, shoot out the address for me because I always get it wrong. I always say 67th, but it's on 69th. But is it on
67th? 72 West 69th Street. It's www.telepan-ny.com. And then don't forget wellnessintheschools.org, April 18th. I want to see everybody there, all right?
Everybody
go. I'm
going to be there. I'm going to be there. I'm coming with you.
Yep, awesome.
I'm going to meet you there. I'm going to bicycle down if the weather permits. Thank you, Mr. Telepan. Thank you, thank you. Take care. Keep up the great work. I'll see you in 2 weeks at this event. Be well.
Awesome.
We're going to segue right from Bill, without any bumper music or any radio interference, to my guest in studio, Risto Zazowski, who's been here a bunch of times. Risto, I'm trying to think when I first met you.
You met me at Casa Lula first. I shouldn't have said that, but that's where you met me.
That's where I met you, because your girlfriend at the time, and wife now, Tia Keenan, was in charge of the cheese program and the side dishes. We were filming there.
Yeah.
She has gone on to do so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you two have become a couple. Out of that marriage is the cutest baby. Oh, my God. If you ever want to see, if you don't think that pizza's a drug, or at least Roberta's pizza, I can't speak to any other. I have seen your son, who's how old now? 2.5?
Just over 2, yeah.
2.5. I saw him before that when he was like, he would come here with Tia and you, and after the show we would all hang out and have dinner afterwards, and he would get that pizza and his eyes would just glass over.
Yeah,
he would just go into Stereo Pizza Land.
Yeah, there's a whole pie for him.
A whole pie for him. He would eat an entire pie. I mean, the pie is the kid who's barely as tall as a, and he would just like eat the thing upside down all over his face. When he was younger, you had that thing on, that big plastic thing that was basically like a ginormous wetsuit.
Exactly.
You could see it would be, you know, the stuff is on his cheeks and his chin. But the thing is, the look on his face was just, there are no words for that.
Now I understand when my grandmother or my mother would watch us eat as kids. Now you understand.
That's why they loved it.
Yeah.
The pleasure that they would get from watching the results of,
yeah.
The kid's amazing. And I miss him because he's always here, but Tia couldn't make it. She's got a great book coming out.
Yeah.
Rizzoli. What's the title of the book?
The Art of the Cheese Plate.
Okay. She's great. What a great person to write it. She's in that pot. It's going to be beautiful. Rizzoli always has beautiful books. It's going to be beautifully photographed. No Effects, I think, was the photographer.
Yeah, No Effects.
Yeah, good stuff. And wine pairings from you.
I assisted her.
It's her book.
It's her book.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
God, that's bingo. So, well, fast forward. So, you were John George for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went, I think the segue was directly to Michael White.
Yep. I've only had 3 jobs in 15 years in the city, so.
And with Michael White, it's huge. So you all the New York restaurants plus D.C.?
Yeah. New York, 6 in New York, 1 in Westchester, 2 in New Jersey.
That's right. I keep forgetting the Westchester, which is the Bedford Inn.
Bedford Post Inn.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then 1 in D.C., yeah.
And then PJ does the chef up there and at iFury?
Yeah. PJ's, yeah. All the chefs are like all over the place helping my, you know, obviously all under Michael. And
right.
it's a great talented team.
And what was he doing? What was PJ doing? You have a restaurant now in Korea?
No, that was kind of a side thing. It was kind of like what I'm doing now, like a pop-up thing where
okay.
There's just a group out there that we went out and we did iFury out there for
a week.
This is like, we've done it 3 years in a row.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about this thing, the Greenwich Project, because it came up. So, I mean, nowadays, everyone, I mean, God, social media is like like this octopus that's destroying all of our lives.
I'm going to blast something later tonight. I still have to get to it.
So it came out. So you obviously, I know a bunch of Psalms, and we're all kind of on Facebook or Instagram and all that stuff together. Yeah. And I'm looking at this list of Psalms, and it was like Pascaline, and you're like, whoa. And then I'm seeing some of the wines. When she was there, she was pouring. So tell me about, what is this thing?
So these private collectors reached out to all of us about 2 months ago saying, hey, we have a friend who has this restaurant called the Greenwich Project on 8th Street down in University. And we want to like do a pop-up for a weekend, like for a few weeks. Are you interested? And I'm like, cool. Like I go, yeah, that sounds pretty fun. Like I would love to do something like that. And I knew the guys. I knew the kind of wine they have. And, you know, and long story short, I'm the last of the 5 weeks that they're doing. They did Chad Walsh, they did Pascaline, they did Yannick Benjamin, Laura Maniac, and now I am up.
I mean, quite a list.
Quite a list. It's fun.
With Ledoux, he's a beast.
Yannick and Heidi were together.
Laura and Pascaline, both master psalms, both young guns in their 30s and bloody brilliant, know them so well. I mean, that's like the greatest hits.
Yeah, no, it's fun. And so I have this whole cellar to choose from, and obviously there's some like off the beaten path stuff, and then there's some really cool old things. Like I'm gonna be pouring some, like, you know, I'm not pouring, I'm gonna be offering like some 70 Free Abbey Cabernet and
Free Mark Abbey Cabernet,
yeah, and like, you know, just like stuff that's, and you know, and from, so what it's, they're trying to create this like convivial kind of scene, no tablecloths, kind of like they put this picture all in our heads, and it sounds fun. Like some of the wines obviously are not going to be super cheap, but they're going to be fun. And the way they look at it is, it's on a Sunday, it's this Sunday and Monday, these are the last two nights I think they're doing it. I don't know if they're going to continue after this or at least take a break. And there's, you know, a couple of fun wines by the glass. Like today we're going to taste a few things, like, you know, a 2000 Cote d'Aron and a 98 Saint-Emilion, and I have some like 98 like Bourgogne Rouge here. And yeah, I mean, what they said is like, it's cool because Sunday's been like kind of neighborhoody, and then Monday's been industry, and people have been coming, and maybe somebody buys a bottle, another person buys another bottle, everyone just gets up and shares. It's really casual, you know, I'll be wearing jeans and, you know, just bring my wine tools to open these old corks up. And yeah, it's gonna be fun.
I mean, I'm looking at this list, and I mean, you make, so there's a bunch, there's at least almost a dozen wines by the glass.
Yeah.
And then there's champagne, whites, reds by the bottle.
But well, I'm other side too.
Oh, we're going to go through. So by the glass, I mean, it's a Saint-Emilion you're talking about, is a Grand Cru. It's 1998 and it's
$13.
Fucking $13 for glass. Yeah. Like, where are you going to find that? Anywhere. Answer is nowhere.
Yeah. And we're like,
Chassagne Montrachet, '05, Vielvin, $18, Beringer, $82.
Yeah, I'm gonna open
$82 Beringer, Knights Valley.
Yeah,
$18 a bottle.
Yeah, the glass.
$18 a glass. I mean, it's insane.
Like, I mean, they have some fun things. They're like, good, go ahead, pop them open. If they're good, we pour them. If they're not good, they're not. I mean, there were some really casual guys, so it should be really it's definitely unpretentious. And yeah, like, it's gonna be cool. I mean, let's see who comes out of the woodwork. I have the last of the list, so they have to buy some more wine, bring some more wines in, because everyone else picked through it. So,
you know. Well, that's nice. So you got, so right, you're the guy. At the,
at the end, like, wait a second, what's going on here? Like, this is all really expensive stuff, guys. And they're like, no, we got, here's another list. I go, okay, great, thanks.
But you're, and he's right, Free Mark Abbey, 1970, 1978. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That is like that's like Jurassic Park. That's like a dinosaur in the wine world, like a time capsule. And we're $220 a bottle. I mean, that's.
I mean, yeah. It's not cheap, but it's.
But that's not. I think it's cheap.
Yeah. So they're also going to be serving food, like little small plates from the restaurant. The chef is a former chef from Picholine, and but it's going to be definitely wine focused, and yeah, it should be a good time.
83 Margaux Brancontinac. 83 Margaux Brancontinac, $130 a bottle. God damn, if I was here on Sunday, I would be there. You'd have to wheel me out at the end of the night. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, and on top, some of these things, you know, the by the glass list is short. So when things 86, I'll probably pop things open and offer different things. And yeah, I mean, the more people come, the better. And Ryan Manna, the sommelier from Osteria Marini, is going to come and assist me. So we're going to work together. It's going to be fun.
It's funny, that whole idea of these collectors that sort of, I mean, when you think of when Shigalanti was a crew, Guild, Veritas, I mean, these restaurants were kind of, I mean, Veritas specifically and crew were just built around guys with just $1 million collections that just said, oh, let's open a restaurant. Here's my cellar, make a list.
Yeah.
And then there's like these dual kind of partnership things. I know that a lot of what Patrick's selling at Pearl and Ash
is from collections of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, everyone needs to help, and everyone's helping, and it's the way, I mean, we just talked about this earlier when we saw each other, like, you know, the way the economy's going a little bit with you know, we got to get clever. We got to get really clever. We need to, you know, we got to, you know, it's only so thin you can slice things, you know, and you just got to get smarter and more resourceful. It's money doesn't grow on trees.
No, it's, I have this kind of, I mean, I'm in the same space as you are, but with a different hat on, media side, but I'm talking to chefs and restaurateurs on a daily basis, often multiple times. And, you know, with this new minimum wage and now the new minimum wage that's walking in. And, you know, people think that restaurants are these, you know, you go to a busy restaurant, you think, oh, my God, they must be just rolling in money. And the profit margin is so effing thin.
Well, this is the thing. We're serving real food. I mean, having Bill Telepen on earlier, like, I really can't top that interview. But, like, they're trying to serve real food to people. You worked in commodities. Like, who knows what that food was?
It's garbage. It's shit.
And like, people expect to pay so much for, like I told you, I just read this interview with David Chang, and he's like, my ramen should cost 28 cost properly.
I did read that.
But we have to sell for 17 or else people are gonna think it's expensive.
Right.
So of course, fast casual is getting popular and just more casual in general because we can't pay money for Bernardo chip plates. I mean, chip replace Bernardo chip plates anymore, and white tablecloth, and all this kind of stuff. And nor do people really want it anymore. But we gotta keep reinventing it. We're all gonna eat. We all need to eat. But we all want to put. We all care what we put in our body.
Yeah, and David also has made the point, as have others that I know. The guy at Fung Too, that, and like, you look at like Korean food or Chinese food specifically. People think it's supposed to be cheap. And a lot of it was because they were using commodity stuff, just stuff. So what if you do Chinese and you use heritage pork? What if you do Chinese or Korean and you're using really good beef?
Yeah.
You know, grass-fed beef or really high quality. You know, suddenly, you know, you can't be serving these ingredients $12, $13, $14. Now it's $22, and people really look askance at that.
No, for sure.
There's just resistance.
There's going to be a line put in the sand eventually that this is considered junk food and this is considered good food.
Right.
And people just don't know the difference still. And, you know, I mean, yeah, listen, it's our job to educate. It's our job to, you know, not, you know, again, like, you know, we want to just, you know, be, you know, you have, we talk, you know, whatever.
We're on the same page.
Let's
say some wine and let's talk. So actually, let's start with the taste. Pour some.
I just say you're right.
All
there.
Right, that's me.
So this is a Pastrugan. Oh, I can't even pronounce it properly. Sorry.
This is a mix of Gamay and
Pinot Noir.
And from Burgundy, and it's called Pastrugan or something.
Pastrugan,
like that.
Yes.
Right.
And the
and
law,
this doesn't look like it's filtered or fine.
Well, first of all, it's 1998.
Ah, Sodeska. I did not see
it's
that.
It's like,
part.
I've never had this wine before. I never had a Pastrugan blend like this before, ever. And it's considered one of the top wine makers in Burgundy, Mayo Camisay. And I poured it already like ahead of time 15 minutes ago. It's kind of reduced. But the law is it's got to be at least X amount of Pinot Noir and X amount Gamay. But then they can put anything else they want in it. Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, anything they want that's growing in the fields. But there's nothing on this wine, even on their website. Like, he doesn't say he makes this wine. So I'm like, great. Now, you know,
that's helpful.
You know,
well, we know there's Gamay, we know there's Pinot Noir, and we know there could be another four or five.
It's probably. I mean, by law, it has to have a minimum of 30% Pinot and 15% Gamay. The rest can be anything else, but it's probably mostly Pinot and maybe a little bit of Gamay because it definitely has a Pinot thing going on in the nose.
It does, but there's also a little like funk in the nose.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
you kind of get from those yeasts that are.
Yeah.
Is this guy? Is he bio? Is he organic? Or is it just?
Well, this is 98, so I don't know what they were doing. I don't know what they were doing back then, but he's definitely considered one of the most aromatic styles of Burgundy. I mean, he's famous for his Clos de Vigeaux and his Richebourg and all the wines from like kind of central and southern Côte de Nuit. I just like a rock star making like kind of like his house wine here.
Right, table wine.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
It's cool, right? We got to drink delicious. It all because we got to pour the next glass here.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, tighter, more acidic. And the acids and tannins kind of give this really like puckering end of the mouth feel.
So 98 was one of the first vintages in Burgundy that I worked with when I started Jean-Georges. And 98 wasn't considered, I mean, a great vintage. It was always considered a hard vintage. It was kind of pretty in the beginning and then finishes off really hard. And that's what this wine does. It has plenty of backbone. It's not wimpy at all.
No, not at all.
All right, so the next wine is...
What's that fancy thing called? What's this
thing? Yeah, it's a Korriban, because I need to use this wine again. This is we're pouring these by the glass. So the Korriban is it's a tool that pushes argon in through the cork.
No oxygen.
And no oxygen gets in the wine. Right. So the wines actually hold... preserve much longer. I mean, it's great if you have a home cellar or if a beverage program wants to pour a lot of wines by the glass that they know they're not going to move so fast. Like my guys in D.C. pour some higher end, like anything over $20 a glass that they know they're going to... We want to ensure people are getting a fresh glass. So it ensures that.
I try and if I open the bottle, I try and finish it. That's my Echo's rule.
Yeah, I know. I know that's...
But then people frown upon that. They're Mike, you have a bottle of wine with dinner by yourself sometimes? I'm like,
No,
it'll last for hours. I don't drink it with dinner. Yeah. Sometimes it'll be like with dinner.
Oh no!
And then I'll go to a cigar and tea, and then I'll go back to the wine after just to see where it's gone in that hour and a half.
How about this? Sometimes we don't have time to finish the whole bottle of wine.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you.
You like that one?
All right. There we go.
Okay. So this is the youngest wine we have right now. I'm showing today. It's a 2000 Cote de Rhone. Producer I never heard of before, but they're organic. Again. This is, I think, $12 a glass we're going to pour it for, whatever it is. It's mostly Grenache, which is
Southern Rhone.
The rest is Syrah, a little funky because, you know, Syrah, like Grenache and Syrah has naturally that spicy kind of gamey thing going on, but with some age on it, you get that sweatiness.
That's a good description. It's kind of sweaty funk.
Sweaty funk, kind of like...
Sweaty, stewy funk.
Like taking off, like, well, I don't know.
Gym clothes? Out of the gym bag?
Yeah, I was thinking like those, like... leather gloves if you're going to like do some yard work or something like that. I don't know who does that anymore, especially in the city.
But in the mouth, holy mackerel. Mm-hmm. What a pleasant wine. That's something. I mean, funny back to back because it's almost the opposite in the mouth.
Completely different. The first one had tension and like grabbed you and you're like, whoa,
right.
And need some food. This one is like, oh man, I can drink this.
Correct.
You might want to take that to finish that later.
I'm having salmon tonight, I'm thinking. A big piece of salmon. And that, I love that. You know, I'm just saying. I think that would work really well with the dinner I'm going to have. Salmon, pizza, and string beans. Beautiful. Yeah.
So it's cool because you're tasting these grapes with development, which with wine gets older, it's harder to tell what grape it really is. But it's cool to taste the development and the secondary flavors and whatnot. So... It's just, these wines are not supposed to be like pretentious at all. They're supposed to be just like, great, I'll try a glass and I'll try something else afterwards.
They're both delicious. I mean, this is kind of like exciting stuff to do. This is why we go out to eat and have somms like you. I just say, no, I don't want a bottle. I'm going to commit, buy the glass. I bet here's what I'm ordering. Here's what she's ordering. Do buy the glass for us.
Odds are I might be doing some fun stuff like popping up a half bottle. They're popping like selling a half bottle of it or something because these guys are really cool. And they're like, if you think you can push it, go ahead. And I want to try some of this juice. Like I've never had this stuff before. Like these old Cali cabs and these like older Chateau Neuf de Pops.
Wow. So now we're in Bordeaux blend world.
So now you're drinking a Bordeaux that needs like that probably is peaked. It's peaking. So 1998.
It's delicious. The nose. You know, almost, I'm not drinking it yet. The nose is like, bing, signature.
Yeah. So mostly Merlot, a little Cabernet Franc. Again, another Chateau I've only maybe seen before, but not crazy. And it's in great condition. The wine, you know, all these wines have been stored for a long time and sitting in one place. 1998, a great year for the Right Bank. And
it's funny. I find myself drinking a lot of Right Bank Bordeaux lately.
Yeah,
for a lot of reasons. It's where, in modernity, it's where if they're nibbling around the edges of organic bio in Bordeaux, it's probably in the Right Bank.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be smaller vigneron. Mm-hmm. It's going to be family run farms, smaller parcels, not a lot of hectares to cover. I never saw that movie Sideways. I swear, but the idea of the vilification of Merlot, like. I remember when it came out, I was like, I guess maybe because I'm old and I grew up drinking Bordeaux and kind of understood its place as a blend and it's how it works beautifully on the left bank to a lesser extent with Cabernet Sauvignon and Cab Franc, but on the right bank, it's you know, Cheval Blanc. I mean, hello, folks. It's an insanely great grape.
I just think I just thought of this now. You know why probably people are enjoying drinking it more now? Because they're so used to Malbec. And if they don't find Malbec, people are probably recommending Right Bank Bordeaux just because it has the same kind of tannin structure. It has the power. It has the dark fruits. It has a little bit of wood on it.
A little bit of oak. Most of the albumetics I can't stand. I hate to say it.
No, no, but people now, the old Pinot Noirs back when Sideways is around, the new grape is Malbec. Like, oh, do you have a Malbec? Do you have a Pinot Grigio? Do you have a Malbec? Like, those are, people just know what comes off their tongue. It's fine. Like, listen, as long as they're drinking wine, that's great.
We cannot be doctrinaire or snobby or judgmental.
Yeah,
as long as they're drinking wine. And eventually they'll take the training wheels off and get in the deep end of the pool and hang out.
Again, everyone, you know, people like to either collect cars or watches or sea salt or whatever it is. You know, I know people with collections of different things, lip balm, whatever it is. Some people like
lip balm.
Some people like to, like, you know, I'd rather spend an extra $5 on a nicer glass of wine or something like that.
Have you met my son?
Yes. Yeah. We were.
He's out of his mind. Like, yeah. The kid makes a lot of money, and has, I guess he's a typical 26-year-old guy. Like, lives month to month. Doesn't have to, but he literally spends like 90% of his discretionary income. Is he goes to Flatiron, he goes to Chambers, and he buys wine. He drinks more expensive wine at home than I do. I'm like, dude, why are you drinking? That's like a $35 bottle. I know that bottle. I know exactly where. I don't drink that wine. It's expensive.
Yeah.
It's really good. I know, but you don't. I mean, you come on. You could find something. He's insane. He's like stoked, and it's hysterical. But anyway, let's take a quick break because we have to take a spot here. These are a couple of people that make this show possible and help support this network, and they're all friends of mine. So a quick spot shout out to those people, Colavita and Bordeaux. And we're going to come back and talk about, I think we're going to segue, I think we're going to talk about Sicily because Pascaline, as you know.
Yeah.
Pascaline's in Sicily. I've been getting, oh my God, the Instagram, Facebook feeds of her and the adventures of her and Alice firing. Traipsing around. They were in Verona. Now they're in Sicily. They're on Etna. Give me a break, girl. It was the only time I was.
She's gonna open a restaurant eventually.
Oh, that's another story. I'll tell you that.
No, in a good way.
She's great. Then Ruchemont will open. Anyway, here's a break. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned.
She's got it. Yeah.
Hey folks, Mike Colomeco here. Everybody knows that great cooking really starts with great ingredients, and these days we have so many options to choose from. Well, I go back to the Colavita family brand for years, and there really is a Colavita family behind this brand. I got their story long after I started using their products. Back in the mid-80s, when I was the chef at the Ritz-Carlton here in New York City, one of the things you can do as a chef is order your own food. You do the purchasing, and we switched olive oils to Colavita. When I had my own restaurant down in Cape May, New Jersey, the Globe, for years, that's all we ever poured at the table. That's all I ever cooked with. And then when I started my PBS show in 1999, I thought, you know, if I'm going to look after underwriting and funders, why don't I go after products that I actually use at home, that I actually cook for my family with and in my restaurant with. I've been working with them for 15 years with the PBS series and now with Heritage Radio. The Colavita family goes back generations in Italy. They make their olive oil from great sourced olives, traceable sourced olives, just south of Rome in Molise province, Abruzzo, which is where my family hails from. Since then, their family's moved here, so there's Colavita's living in Rome, Colavita's living in America. It's a great, trusted family brand. It's the olive oil I use, and I recommend you try it as well. So when you think of the great wine regions of the world historically, I mean, you're going to be led back to Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne, okay, maybe Piedmont, Italy, too. And as a chef growing up, boy, if you were working in great restaurants in the 70s and 80s, they were mostly all French, and we grew up drinking Bordeaux and Burgundy and Champagne with impunity. Well, fast forward to today, and I just got back from the 2015 Bordeaux harvest. We were there for a week with a bunch of sommeliers. It was so much fun, and I'll tell you, this isn't your grandfather's Bordeaux. There's a whole new generation of young vignerons working with this great terroir that they've lived on, this soil that they know that they've grown up with, and the great varietals that we all know and love, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, Malbec. You know, this style of Bordeaux now that's younger, that's fresher, that's meant to be consumed now and not cellared, because honestly, which of us has a cellar? And who wants to buy a bottle of wine and wait 10 years? So the Bordeaux whites are amazing. You know, Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon, like, hello, two grapes that we know. The reds tell all sorts of different stories, from the left bank style that are a little more Cabernet Sauvignon driven, a little more structured, right bank a little more Merlot, a little easier, a little more upfront friendly. But
If you haven't thought about drinking Bordeaux wine, give it another shot. For $15 to $35 in that price range, which is my price range, there's tremendous value in there. So if you're walking past a Bordeaux aisle, stop, grab a great bottle. These are some of the most food-friendly wines on planet Earth.
Have you listened to A Taste of the Past? It's a show devoted to connecting our current food world with its storied past. Host and culinary historian Linda Palacio welcomes chefs, scientists, authors, scholars, and revolutionaries into the studio to discuss food culture and history from around the globe.
Have you seen the culture of food change over the past 25, 30 years?
Incredible. It's been incredible.
Linda covers content ranging from the history of black chefs in the White House to behavioral psychology and the evolution of Italian food in America. You can listen to A Taste of the Past anytime on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes and Stitcher.
Hey, welcome back. Kalameko here with Risto Zazovsky, the beverage director slash sommelier for Altamirae Group, which is Michael White's growing empire. All right, so as I said, I have been forced by outside forces to embrace the world of social media, in spite of the fact that it isn't my bag.
But welcome to Instagram.
Welcome to Instagram. So, you know, dude, you got to be with it because that's like a metric now. So I'm like, okay, grandpa learned. So I've been dragged reluctantly into the 21st century. Fine, I'm here. It's all good. And all right, food's better than ever. Food's better than ever nowadays. But anyway, but it is kind of cool because you kind of open up your thing. Like first thing in the morning, I'll check my Gmail account and then I go to Facebook right away. Like what's on the Facebook and scroll down and then who likes my Instagram, whatever. But Facebook's cool because you have these, you know, hundreds or thousands of friends. In probably both of our cases, a lot of them actually are friends.
Yep.
And you get to see where they are and what they're eating and what they're doing, and it's cool. So Pascaline, who's gotten a lot of buzz on this show already, she's been on the show a bunch of times. She's a real rock star. I first met her on the floor of Rouge Tomate Uptown. Has been traveling with one of her best friends and another great ambassador for the world of wines, Alice Firing, who was a real pioneer in the whole bio, organic, natural. I hate to throw these terms around. I mean, bio means something, so does organic. Natural, kind of maybe a little more wobbly. But Alice has been on this bandwagon forever. And they're traveling around, and right now they're in Etna. So let's talk about like Etna in the last 15 years. Historically,
Drink it while it's still affordable.
Nero d'Avila. I mean, historically, they were producing a lot of Sicily was shit Nero d'Avila that they were sending to the mainland to blend.
Yeah, so Sicily of all 20 states in France and in Italy produces the most wine. Yeah, they make the most. Are they the most or the second? It's between them and Veneto. One of those two. They make the most. But yeah, because of all the bulk wine, all the all the Marsala and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And Nero d'Avila that they were just sending in big tanks for blending on the inside. And now suddenly, like Sud de France, like the Loire Valley, like other places, as Vigneron got priced out of other regions, they started to look and say, where can I go? And we've seen this happen all around France and all around Italy too. And so suddenly, you know, Sicily was like maybe a bargain place to go. And then you look at Etna and you think, well, what do we love as wine drinkers, and what do Vigneron look for? Well, we like elevation. We like temperature swings. We like cool nights. We like hot days. We like breezes because that'll prevent a lot of bugs and mold and stuff. Not a lot of rain. Oh, and throw in incredible volcanic soil, all kinds of granite and volcanic soil, black volcanic soil. It's a bloody active volcano. And and exposures. And you've got, like, suddenly it's like paradise.
And vines that have been there for a while, too.
Forever, forever, forever. The Greeks kind of trained the Romans, or whoever the hell was in Sicily at that time, how to move those stones around and build those terraces to hold the ground so when it rains, your topsoil doesn't run off. But I'll never forget, we were at a restaurant, me and two wine friends of mine, Beth and her cohort from Cornerstone, but totally into wine. They study wine all the time. And we were down...
Costada.
Costada Steakhouse, the former, not there anymore, RIP, unfortunately. We're down at Costada, and you came out with a white, and we're always gluttons for punishment, so I'm like, I never want to know. I do this all the time when I go out, when I know the front of the house people, the sommeliers, you blind taste me, so just don't let me see the label.
Yeah, I asked you. I said, do you want to...
No, but we don't want to know. And I always do this because it's fun. Cause I just find it a challenge as a person that drinks wine because you're kind of walking in the dark and it makes you do this kind of deductive detective work of what does it remind me of? You know, all that stuff. Because you, I mean, you've been studying wine forever. You know the drill. And you poured it, you decanted it, you swirled it around, and we poured it, and we were honing in, and you think I got it, but I'm not sure.
No,
I was close.
You got it.
So it's a mystery. It's a white wine, and it was decanted, and it's in the glass, and we're going, okay, so it's Italian, and it's probably Southern Italian, and it's coastal, and I'm getting a little something that suggests volcanic, so it could be from maybe outside of Naples, or it could be, and I think you were like nudging us, you were like, you're close, and it tastes like an island wine, and bingo, suddenly the light goes on, Caricante.
Yeah.
Etna Bianco.
Yep.
Talk about the wines now that are coming out of Etna.
So... I mean, it's really that little area is like you consider this beautiful just one spot in the world that's not like anywhere else. You're right. Volcanic soils, wines growing between 400 and 1,000 meters above sea level.
Close to the sea.
It's so that area, like everywhere else in Europe, like was making wine forever but died and became a bulk. I mean, Italy, for back and forth through all the world wars, pretty much got the shit end of the stick. And not until the 80s did finally like Polari decide, like, you know, I think we can rejuvenate this area. And they were probably the pioneers that brought things back. And yeah, they planted all over, obviously trying not to make just bulk wine because it's easy to make wine in that great whole area of Italy, of Sicily. But and then it just slowly, like you said, these guys start moving down there and be like, wow, this is really cool. We can do some things here. And I remember the first Sicilian wine I tasted when I was at JG, and I was like, wow, this is like Burgundy meets CDP. Shutting up the pop. It was like it had tension and acid, but it had this smoky kind of like meaty thing going on. And I was like, wow. And and it was up there in the mountains. And it was actually from Faro, but let's just for Etna's sake, it was similar in characteristics. And I've been a fan. I was like, these are awesome. And I'm fortunate to go out there. But yeah, there's some areas that still have old vines. Like the wine you had was from Bonatti, and Bonatti is actually vigneron that have been there since.
That's who it was, Bonatti? Okay.
Yeah, Bonatti, Bonatti, just the way it sounds.
Bonatti.
Yeah. And that wine you had was one of three vineyards they have that were basically ungrafted, pre-phylloxera, like 60 to 100 year old vines and white wine. And the other two are red wine vineyards. And they have vineyards in all... think of Mount Etna. Obviously, it's a volcano, but the vines are planted in the north, the east, and the south. So think of it as like kind of like a moon, like a moon wedge. And it's just beautiful. But I'm so glad it's rejuvenated. Like I said, drink these wines now because they will. Right. I mean, look at what happened. Look at what happened in Austria 10 years ago with Gruner Veltliner and you know, even Beaujolais in a way.
I was going to say that's what comes to mind. I was the 05 harvest, which was one of the great harvests of this century, and Beaujolais was beginning to get traction. I was working with them to help promote, and we were meeting Jean Paul Brun and the guys there that really really vigneron. And we were there during the harvest, and these guys' hands were just dirt. And yeah. I mean, they were stained. Their teeth were stained. And I was thinking, fucking. And back then, you could buy those wines in New York for $18 to $22 a bottle for Cru Beaujolais.
Yeah.
And now it's $10 north easily.
Yeah, it's not ridiculous.
Still worth it.
Because you drink those wines young. But I think Etna is going to get expensive because those wines have so much tension and acid to them that those wines can age. Like the guys that are going to get it are the guys that like really make well-balanced wines. And like I said, like we just tasted this this Pinot dominated blend and this Grenache that are like 20 years old and they're
alive.
They're still really alive. I just don't think there's enough. The culture is, for being Italy and having so much culture, that area is still young. So we'll see it. But like I said, Bonatti. So the cool thing with Bonatti is they were, I think, I visited the winery. They were pharmacists and or scientists or something like that. They were doctors. Let's just say they were doctors. And they had that winery since, let's just say, 1900, it would give or take 10 years. And I think in the 30s or 40s, the father, the second generation, decided to sell it. And then the generation now, I think two generations later, bought it back.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool.
Crazy. I didn't know. That's crazy. So out of their hands for the whole, most of a century.
Something, or maybe they leased it out, or whatever it was, they
that was theirs.
Theirs. They love it now. Yeah.
And Sicily's full of these characters. I mean, Cornelissen's this Belgian guy that comes down, who he was not a winemaker to be, just falls in love with these parcels and then goes full on bio.
Yep.
It's like him and a donkey. And he produces these wines. I mean, there's one that I buy at Discovery, the entry level one. That's something. What's it called? You know the one. It sells for $20-some a bottle. Kind of cloudy red. But it's an amazingly. It's such a wonderfully alive bottle of wine. I'm always marveling every time I drink that wine. I forget that because the name's written down the side of the label. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's delicious. It changes from glass to glass, within the glass, from the beginning of the bottle to the end. Super food friendly.
Yep.
And alive.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question. The older I get, it seems, the more I'm steering away from big, oaky, fruity, concentrated wines. I don't know why this is. So this is strange. But, you know, I find myself loving Pella Verga, Schiava, Rucche, Cerezolo, Grignolino, Pinot Noir, Gamay, Norella Mascalese. That great. Why do you think that is? I think you go the other way. You think that the older I get, the more I would want these big, extracted, you know, wines that are kind of higher alcohol and have seen oak and are just, you know, and I don't. I'm going to find myself not going there anymore.
Let me think about this. I feel like
you're not my shrink. You don't have to answer the question.
No, I know. I feel like it's easy to drink those wines first. I remember when I learned wines, the first two things I drank were California Cab and Bordeaux.
Big. Broad-shouldered.
Just like, wow, this has more power. This is, like, you couldn't understand the nuances. So the older we get, I think we like things a little bit more. We pay attention to more of the nuances. And it's nothing wrong with those big wines. There's a place for them. You definitely enjoy drinking them. Like, I had some amazing Cali Cab the other day, and I was like, wow, this is really impressive. I think, like, when I went from focusing on French wines at John George to Italian wines at Altamirea Group, right, it was difficult for me to put a white wine list together from scratch because I thought all the wines were like, wow, Italian white, I really need to learn more about them. And I use that part in Spinal Tap where I needed to, like, stop and put the volume all the way to 11 and listen to it. Because those wines, yes, if you just drink it like just, they all, let's just say they all taste the same. Let's just think of the first time we ever had wine, it's intimidating. Well, red wine tastes like red wine, it's heavier, light, and then white wine tastes like white wine. It's, you know, dry or sweet or something like that, right? Like, let's just be really
basic.
Yeah. You really need to listen to, like, those wines. So the more we get interested in anything, the more we tell the difference on things. There's definitely more shades of gray. Where in the beginning, it's more like, well, what's bigger than this? What's bigger than this? What's bigger than this? It's easy to add on top. It's easier to make something sweeter. It's easier to make something heavier. It's easy to make something saltier. Like, whatever it is, it's easy to make something just richer.
Yeah.
Let's
pick this really ripe fruit. Let's wait till there's a ton of sugar. We get a lot of alcohol. Let's use new oak. Bah, 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 bing.
No. But listen, you need to have the perfect recipe for that, too. That's how you're baking those wines. Like, there's great winemakers in California and in Southern Rhone, sort of Southern France and Australia. Like, they make great wine. They have these great concentrated grapes. They know what to do with them. Mm. But then there's people that are like, I want to try to make this. And, you know, that's a thing. Like, I just think it takes longer to have different kind of trends, let's just say, because you can only make wine once a year.
God, that's the other thing.
You can't
bake
can't make three pizzas in the next hour and just make it better and better. You need to wait a year before you do it.
Right.
So I just think
and subject to the weather and subject to all of this, you know, from fruit set to bud, to you name it, to the summer, is it going to rain? And how are we going to get to the harvest? What's the weather going to be like at the harvest? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be hail or rain? It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like alchemy. It's like, I don't know how these people do it. It's like torture.
So I just think people know more and they want to try different things. Like, you know, I went from starting drinking vodka to going to rum, then going to bourbon, and now I prefer single malts and gins. I just, like, I don't know, like, your palate, you want different sensations, yeah, in your mouth, and you want to change different things.
Right.
It's easy to say, well, it depends what you're eating, because sometimes, no, I don't think, sometimes I want to drink rosé no matter what I'm eating, because I feel like drinking a nice chilled rosé. Sometimes I really want, like, a really high acid, like, tense, like, whatever it is, like Barbera. And then sometimes I'm like, all right, I really just want a slutty wine. Like, give me something juicy, and I can just drink it,
right,
and it goes with these, like...
Simple pleasure. Yeah. Simple pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I like Eric Asimov's writing the last bunch of years on wine, and he talks about, you know... I mean, when he did that piece, he's doing that Wine of the Month, or whatever it's called, and he was writing about Sauvignon, Chenin from Loire, and he's talking about that wine being this sort of difficult... Like, sometimes you want to read a Tom Clancy novel because it's pure pleasure. You want to watch, yeah, a James Bond movie, you know, then you go... But Sauvignon is this sort of wine that you really need to board down. Is it going to be oxidative or reductive?
Yep.
I mean, what am I signing up for? And can I tell even from the fucking label?
I had a white Burgundy yesterday that the winemaker purposely makes oxidized. I'm like, okay. I have never felt, or I the sensations on my tongue were not going where I thought Chardonnay should be going.
Right.
Okay, this is not a bad wine. It just, but then maybe down the road, I'm like, wow, I've never had that wine. I really want to try it with this dish or something like that. Because I just think there's more out there. Social media, education, more publications. There's just so much media and so many more. I mean, the culture just grown. So, of course, you know, we're going to like what we like as sommeliers. But we also need to, like, I know what I can sell in New Jersey and what I can't. I know what I can sell in the Upper East Side and what I can't. I know what I can sell in Soho and what I – and I think you can just get away with more things in different areas.
And we are – I say this every time I have someone here about – I mean, we are so lucky to be in a city like New York City today, because we are awash in incredible wines. There's so many great small importers. So many, I mean, Dresner may have started something a while back, but Kermit Lynch and Rosenthal. I mean, there's just these guys with, yeah, these portfolios and little niche people, you know, Savio Suarez and Jenny and Francois and Zev. I mean, there's so many great wines coming to this market, mm-hmm, that my friends that come from Europe are like, you know, they come from France. Or literally, I can't buy this wine in France and you have it here.
Right.
Crazy, because the allocation was we want to go to the States.
Yeah, no.
We're swimming in this.
It's a cool time right now for
great
this
time.
Stuff. It's really cool.
I went out to dinner a couple of weeks ago, went to Namwa Tea Parlor, and I asked Wilson if he would just waive the corkage charge because I was coming with wine friends. So everyone brought a bottle. It was four or five of us. We had five or six bottles of wine. One of them was a friend of mine that works, Beth, works for Cornerstone, who reps Alto Adige. She had a Pinot Grigio, which is a grape that, you know, it can be filled. I mean, there's so much bad Pinot Grigio, mm-hmm, out there. Let's not discuss that, but there's great. So Alto Adige, high elevation. Mm-hmm. I forget the year. And I remember we were – and everyone at the table was into wine, and my son was there too. And then we poured it, and we're all just, why does this wine have this weight? The color was pretty intense, darker golden than you would think. Mouthfeel was a little rounder, a little oilier, just more, there was more to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking maybe a little skin contact, maybe, you know, a couple of months on lees with batonnage. Mm-hmm. We're all guessing. So no one has the answer. So we Google, Beth gets home and Googles the producer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain? I think the year was 12, and she said it was kind of a difficult year. Fair amount of rain in the summer, too much rain in the summer, actually. And then we got to the fall and it really dried out. Like, it just stopped raining. And then we had those temperature swings, because the Alto Adige is famous for that. It's like one of the hottest places in Italy, Bolzano is. And then at night it just drops down 30 degrees. So you've got those great diurnal swings. And then she said, you know, we left the fruit on the vine until the last minute. We could just get away with it. We did. And our yield was slightly down. So 15% less yield than normal. And then she threw this word in, extracts or extraction or extract or something. And mm-hmm. I'm totally okay. So I get it. What does that mean? And then we all went to like Jance's extract. How do you define that in wine? It has to do with like the dry compounds that are, what's that word mean?
Well,
and it wasn't extraction as in extraction that way.
Yeah.
It was extracts. And it was just, so it was just funny. It was just like all of us were bouncing around these ideas and they came back to us and it had to do with these things that are left in the wine,
right,
when
okay.
everything else goes out.
All right. So I never heard that term before. So I was going to tell you what I think.
Okay.
The less you mess with Pinot Grigio, the better it tastes.
Mm.
The problem is everyone filters it and makes it look like a neutral, simple wine. And that's what people expect. But the great Pinot Grigio should have this kind of pinkish hue. Or at least kind of a light gray, because the grapes, if you see them,
are gray.
they're freaking red.
Yeah, right.
I show people, I go, guess what the grape that is? Like, what? I go, this is Pinot Grigio. I go, really? I go, yeah. And when people are like, wow, this is like, why is it weird in color? I go, because this is what it's supposed to be. And Alto Adige, Friuli, yes. Has it been bastardized a little bit? Yes. But there's a market for all that kind of stuff. I think when I put a Pinot Grigio by the glass at one of the restaurants and people come, I want a glass of wine. I go, great. Can I blind you on it? And of course, like you, can I? Because I don't want to show the bottle of it. I go, great. And I pour it to him. I'm like, wow, this is really good. I'm like, thanks. And I go, what do you think it is? I go, it tastes like, you know, maybe Chablis or something like that. Because, listen, Pinot Grigio is a very neutral varietal. It's considered in the same camp as Pinot Blanc and Chardonnay. It can be manipulated because you can add to it, and it's like cake. You can add frosting to it. And it doesn't, like, where Riesling and those other grapes, like Sauvignon Blanc, those guys are like their own skeleton. And they were like, wow. Like, I remember doing that for like the whole, like, I'm like, I'm opening this restaurant and I'm putting a fucking Pinot Grigio on the list because this is delicious. And I'm gonna like, people are like, wow, I can't believe it. And it was really cool. I think people shouldn't assume, like, when you know, with whatever is Malbec, I think everyone's making something good everywhere. There's right. a reason why it's, you know, it's there. But your point is that it was not filtered. It was pressed normally. It was not manipulated.
Yeah, I think with native yeast too. A bunch of things that made sense.
Well, no. Of course, like all the things everyone that's doing good wine now, native yeast. Whatever. Maybe it was unfiltered or whatever it was. But yeah,
it's so funny. Well, thanks. It was funny, and I love. I mean, thanks. I mean, I have so much. It's what you guys do. What Sam's bring to us diners in the food world. The pleasure. Pouring us great wines, explaining us, walking us through it. I love the blind tasting stuff. It's so much fun to be at, you know, at the table when you're pouring wines for us. And we don't go out to dinner much because you're busy and I'm busy and we're in different worlds. But I love hanging out with wine people. It's kind of like the thing to do. Is
it flew. Our time flew.
I know. We went through an hour. And we had, like, what are we going to talk about? I don't know. Let's just
talk.
I think we can figure this out.
But one last thing I want to say.
Yeah,
like,
please.
We talked about wine, like wineries only be able to make wine once a year. So we're all figuring out. But think about this. If you like your sommelier, whether they pick a wine you like or not, if you got a good mojo with them, you should go back to see them. And don't let that turn you off, because they're probably going to do a better job picking the next wine for you, too.
Same thing with a great retail store.
Yep.
Good. Right, in New York, we've got Chambers, we've got all these great stores. And once they get to know what you, and you come back and you give them feedback, then it's like everything's a bank shot.
Yeah.
They've got you. Because then, oh, he likes this. He likes, fine.
I mean, you can
this.
Tell us also the same night if it's really bad, because we're going to find something for you. But my point is, it's always good to refine and get people to know who you are, because everyone has their own taste.
Yeah. Risto Zazowski has been my guest. He's been here a lot. He'll be back again. The wife's Tia Keene. She's got a great book coming out. Risto's the beverage director for Alta Maria. Super fun to have you out here. Thanks a lot. Give
Stereo
a big hug for me.
I will.
Tell your wife I said hello.
I will.
Give the kid a pizza or something to eat.
I might bring him one home. Actually, I gotta go to work after this, but...
Sorry. Thank you. Stay tuned. We're off for a couple of weeks. There's spring break, they tell me, which is good for me. So we have 2 weeks off. We'll be back in whatever 2 weeks after this is with more food talk. Thanks for listening. Take care. Be well. Drink more wine. Bye-bye.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.